Atenção, senhores espectadores. Muito boa tarde.
Corkout History presents
Grândola Vila Morena,
Picard Nation Revolution.
A partir deste momento, o movimento das Forças Armadas,
brought to you by André Andinês,
controla totalmente a rede emissora da Rádio e Televisão Portuguesa.
Today, let's dive into the role of women during the Estado Novo, the new state dictatorship, and before the revolution of the 25th of April that all our episodes are leading up to. Spoiler alert, it wasn't great. During the dictatorship, women were mainly valued for their roles as nurturing mothers and devoted wives, expected to create the perfect home environment. From a young age, they were groomed to be submissive to male authority figures, whether it be their father, brother, or later their husband. Their aspirations were often limited to securing a good marriage to ensure stability and strength for the family, a reflection of the regime's emphasis on unity and tradition. While the 1933 Constitution theoretically proclaimed equality before the law, there were exceptions that reinforced the traditional gender roles. It acknowledged differences resulting from a woman's nature and for the good of the family, essentially codifying the expectation that women's primary place was within the domestic sphere. And now I'll quote the Civil Code of 1966. The husband is the head of the family, and in this capacity it is his responsibility to represent his wife and decide on all aspects of common conjugal life. So, here's the deal for married women back then. They were kind of pushed to the sidelines, all in name of family values. Their basic rights were seriously limited, and it wasn't easy to break free from that situation. Especially because, you know, divorce wasn't really a thing in Catholic marriages, and most marriages in the country followed Catholic rules. In terms of the law, this thing called marital power basically meant that women had to follow whatever the head of the family said. That led to all sorts of problems for married women, and even daughters who were dependent on their families. For starters, no voting was allowed. Yep, you heard me right. Married women were shut out from voting, along with single women who relied on others financially, or who didn't have what society deemed good moral character. So, who does that leave out? And voting wasn't all. So, do you need to go abroad or open a bank account? You must get your husband's or dad's written permission first. Oh, and get this detail. In 1966, the Civil Code even went to the extent of saying that husbands were allowed to snoop through their wives' mail. Why not? As if all this wasn't enough, wives couldn't use contraceptives without their husband's say-so. If they did, it could even lead to divorce. Plus, abortion, of course, was forbidden and could land you in prison. Even though domestic government was attributed to women, supposedly meaning that women run the show in the home, don't get any ideas. We're talking chores and looking after the kids. Because when it comes to managing the money, including her own, that was all in the husband's hands. Married women could not even touch their own property without their husband's permission. Also, women need to deal with the children, but don't think that moms really have much of a say in decision-making. That's up to good old dad, who, as head of the family, calls all the shots on that front. Now, let's break down some more of the not-so-great stuff women had to deal with back then. Divorce? Forget about it. Thanks to a deal made with the Catholic Church in 1944, it was pretty much off the table. Any kids born of a new relationship after the first marriage? Yeah, well, they were considered illegitimate until 1975, after the revolution, when courts could finally dissolve the marriages. And, you know, no divorce, but if a woman was found to not be a virgin after she got married, that could be grounds for the marriage to be annulled. Now, here's where things get really grim. If a woman was the victim of a sexual crime, it wasn't seen as an attack on her freedom. Instead, it was seen as an attack on her reputation. Which means that, in this logic, the rapist who married the victim, remaining that way for at least 5 years, would not have to serve any sentence. But it doesn't stop here. Brace yourself for this one. Up until 1975, there was something called honor crimes in the Portuguese Penal Code. That meant that if a father found out that his daughters, under 21 years old, were thought to be corrupted, or that his wife had been having an affair, so was in an adulterous relationship, and he would kill them, the maximum punishment was to spend 6 months in exile. Yes, you heard me correctly. The punishment for killing your daughters and wife would be 6 months abroad. Now, let's move on and talk about women and work. Spoiler alert, it wasn't exactly smooth sailing there either. Back then, women faced some pretty hefty limitations when it came to jobs. In fact, some professions were completely off-limits to them. There was this whole idea in the Estado Novo regime that married women should focus on their homes, which meant that they weren't supposed to be chasing careers, of course. So, if a woman did want to work, she had to jump through a ton of hoops, thanks to her marital status. Husbands could straight up forbid wives from working, and certain professions like law, diplomacy, and anything in the security forces were strictly no-go zones for women. You couldn't even get into commerce without your husband's okay. Think about it. Women couldn't be judges, diplomats, politicians, or, of course, join the military or the police. It was a pretty closed-off world for them professionally. By the time April 25th, 1974 rolled around, a whopping 70% of Portuguese women aged 20 to 54 were housewives. Only a tiny 19% were out there working, and most of them were young and single, being between 15 and 24. So, yeah, the job market wasn't exactly welcoming for women back then. In the few jobs they were able to hold, they were subject to numerous downright strange rules that, in today's eyes, are truly bizarre. First off, if you were a single woman, you had a decent shot at snagging a job as a nurse, or a telephone operator, or a hostess in TAP, the Portuguese Airlines. But here's the catch. You couldn't get married. Yeah, your relationship status mattered more than your qualifications. Single ladies only. If you were a teacher looking to settle down, well, good luck. The law said that you could only marry a guy who made more money than you. But that's not all. You had to ask the Ministry of Education for permission to tie the knot. And if approved, they'd make a public announcement giving you the green light. Isn't it great? Now, if you were already married and looking to work, you needed your husband's stamp of approval. Seriously, your employment contract was worth nothing next to your marriage vows. If your husband waltzed into your workplace and said, "Nope, my wife's not working here anymore," you were out of luck and out of job. And to add insult to injury, women were making a whopping 40% less than men. In the grand scheme of things, women's rights were basically non-existent under this regime. We owe a debt of gratitude to the brave women who stood up against the oppressive regime, fighting for their rights despite the risks they faced. But let's also not forget all the women who endured injustice silently, unable to openly resist. Every single day, they had to navigate a system that denied them basic freedoms and rights. Their strength and resilience, whether vocal or silent, deserves to be remembered and honored. April 25th, 1974, marked a pivotal moment in history when those terrible laws were finally torn up. It stands as one of the great legacies of the revolution, ushering in a new era of freedom and equality. In the years that followed, the new constitution solidified women's rights, ensuring that the struggles and sacrifices of those who fought against injustice were not in vain.
And this is where we'll stop for now. Join us on the next episode.
Until then, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Corkout History Pod, where you can reach out to us, let us know your thoughts, and discover more about the episodes.
Don't forget to rate and subscribe wherever you're listening to us.
Your comments really are crucial so that more people can find us.
Bye!